Simple message. What the hell are we dying for? Good evening. Welcome to a somewhat unusual Edge of Darkness tonight. Jeffrey Bennett on this 24th day of August. In two more days will be the second anniversary of the passing of my son. And I look back on not just this 2 years, but I look back 21 years. I came across a piece today that I had written on May 13th of 2002. As I begin to read through it, there are some things, some names that you'll recognize, some issues that you'll recognize, but that's not the point. We deal with sex, drugs, guns, and rock and roll. And that is the title of tonight's program. But sex, drugs, guns, and rock and roll, that's a leftover saying from the 60s. Yeah, it is, but it got your attention, didn't it? Unfortunately, they're not the only things left over from the decade of peace and love, man. During that decade, we saw the birth of free love. Forgetting that with everything, there is a price to pay. Our nation has become steeped in moral decay as the epidemic of AIDS spread worldwide. Some say that it was a virus developed in the U.S. Others say that it was caused by monkeys. And still others who believe that it was caused by the rampant spread of deviant sexual behavior. Does it really matter at this point what the cause was? As a nation, we the people of the United States of America never seem to heed the lessons of history, my friends. Sodom and Gomorrah set the stage oh so long ago, and yet today, anything seems to go in America. And we, as a society, have turned to stone. Our schools have become proving grounds for alternative sex education classes. Our children are being taught to accept anything which is considered outside the norm. homosexuality now openly being taught in the government-run fool system, sanctioned and promoted by administrations who got their education during that same tumultuous decade. All the while, parents sit at home and do nothing. I guess maybe their parents had taken too many drugs, thereby transferring the dead brain cells to their children. Guns? What does that have to do with the 60s? Remember the Kennedys? Martin Luther King? Oswald Saran, Kent State? The same liberal dope smokers, inhalers or not, are now running the zoo, my friends, which we call Congress. The same dope smokers have been reinventing the education system so that we can staff all schools with special child psychologists who liberally dispense Ritalin and Prozac to our so-called troubled youth. Remember Columbine High School and the others? These socialist leaders and educators must have inhaled a lot because they want to disarm America and will go to any length to reinterpret the Constitution and the Bill of Rights so as to achieve their goals or communist goals. And yet the sheep will go along without any question. As to rock and roll, other than being 1930s slang for fornication, George W. Bush, when he was in the White House, brought the likes of Bono and Ozzy Osbourne to the White House. Hell, Clinton did it. Baby Bush thought about it. Of course, Nixon did bring in Elvis. What are these characters thinking about? Each and every one of them thought of nothing more than future votes. From some of our AIDS-infected, dope-smoking, homosexual youth? Oh, what a fantasy, my friends. Well, let me see. What else? Well, after all these years, 21-odd years since I wrote this, we still don't have the guts to tell Israel to get off the dime. They have proven to be amongst the biggest mooches in our history. And we don't have the guts to tell them to stand on their own damn 2 feet and deal with the problems. Problems which they have caused to begin with. Retired Admiral Thomas Moore, former chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff, speaking of Israel, once stated that, "I have never seen a president, I don't care who he is, stand up to them. They, Israel, always get what they want." If the American people understood what grip those people have on our government, they would rise up in arms. Maybe that's the reason they want our guns. Remember the USS Liberty? At what cost, Israel? Now, my friends, beyond all of this, we watch daily a government going awry, steeped in corruption. As we've stated at the beginning of this commentary, nothing is free. There is a price to pay for everything. The sins of our mothers and fathers have come home to roost due to the apathy of the American sheeple. Well, I guess there's enough to keep the edge of darkness coming your way for a while. I'll see you at the movies. Without apology, I am Jeffrey Bennett. 21 years ago. How little has changed, my friends. I take a look at some of the headlines today, the insanity. A term that I learned in Vietnam, buku dinh dao. The insanity is not going to end. Our taxpayer cash is being used to bankroll more COVID vaccines. Mask mandates have reemerged amid upturn in COVID-19 cases. This shocks me. Upturn in COVID-19 cases as of 2 weeks ago. We never read about this. Schools were already closing due to COVID just weeks after starting. The BS has begun. Go to school or stay home with your children's cold. Jesus, they're not going to die from the flu or the cold. So ridiculous, America will have the most uneducated children with no chance to ever catch up. Parents should consider homeschooling. 2 weeks into the start of the school year, officials in Kentucky have called off school for the rest of the week due to student and staff illness. And an hour or so ago, I was sent a rather large photo, which I published, along with these headlines and the introduction of their full stories on federalobserver.com. Mission accomplished. The fake pandemic is over. We jabbed enough to depopulate the earth by billions in 5 to 10 years. We have plausible deniability. And once the die-off begins in earnest, no one will blame the vaccines. The jabs will go down the memory hole. The animal tests told us what would happen. The die-off is slow but uncertain. And then I look elsewhere about more scams, shams. There's a sham medical study that defends gender-affirming care. Oh, a well-known medical organization claims it will take a more critical look at the supposed science behind body-chopping surgeries for gender-confused transgender children. But a second medical group says don't be fooled. In light of its politicized vote in 2018, the American Academy of Pediatrics recently reaffirmed its support for hormones and surgery for minors, but also seemed to bow to pressure by stating it will conduct more research. And that reassurance didn't mean much to the doctors of the American College of Pediatricians, a rival and more right-leaning organization. Quentin Van Meter, speaking for the American College of Pediatricians, tells us that the Academy is not promising a systemic review of its practices. He said they allude to there has been so much published that bolsters our original conclusion. And what we're doing is that we're redoing this statement with what we call a systemic review to prove that we're right, which is a thoroughly confusing statement to begin with. That doesn't mean the definition of a systemic review, because such a review must be down outside the organization by an independent body, which obviously is not the case. Over the previous 5 years since that 2018 vote, the transgender controversy has exploded and influenced everything but college sports, everything from college sports and military readiness to elementary school lessons and school district policies. What was once recognized by the American Psychology Association as a mental disorder was watered down in 2013, thanks largely to homosexual activists who embraced the T as part of their expanding alphabet, transsexual. According to those activists, a transgender person should be encouraged to live your truth and be your true self. Critics who push back, especially women, are called transphobic. And worse, they're accused of making transgender people suicidal by misgendering them or dead-naming them. And the medical community has been sucked into this controversy as well. Supplying puberty hormones, performing surgery on minors is now referred to as gender-affirming care. And over in liberal Europe, meanwhile, medical boards in Sweden, the United Kingdom, Finland, and France are pumping the brakes on under 18 gender-affirming care based on other scientific reviews. Last year, the National Board of Health and Welfare in Sweden and Hormone said that hormone treatments should be given only in exceptional cases. Norway considers hormone blockers experimental, and a medical board in France similarly cited concerns about growth, weakened bones, and a risk of infertility. But back in the United States, our country's own national pediatric group is merely pretending to conduct a thorough review. It's going to be a sham. It is so obvious that the outcome has already been determined before the review has even been launched, and so it's no benefit at all. It's just more science, more ideology, trumping science. Copy Charlie Butts and Billy Davis for American Family News. Do you begin to understand and see any and all of this? And then I go over to American Medical Association, who claims that taxpayers should subsidize trans reproductive surgeries. A recent article by the AMA is suggesting taxpayers should pay the bill for biological men who choose to get a uterus transplant from dead women. I mean, that sounds more to me like something from a Frankenstein movie. The AMA paper says there are no moral or ethical reasons why you and I shouldn't pony up our taxpayer dollars to help transgenders improve their mental health. And the paper says taxpayers should also fund facial and other cosmetic surgeries to help a man feel and look more like a woman, along with procedures that would allow men to actually menstruate or gestate children. My friends, this is an unbelievable dangerous proposal. Dr. Martin Makary, professor at Johns Hopkins School of Medicine, told the Washington Examiner recently that the AMA has chosen activist positions on this delicate topic. Why don't they fund a study on the 10-year regret rate of children who undergo transitioning surgery? What's the suicide rate among those who undergo aggressive hormone and surgical treatment versus long-term talk therapy? And Makary added that the irony of the AMA's focus on promoting uterus transplants in biological men is that other gender-affirming treatments they push for are making children permanently infertile. The AMA leadership belief that children can simply pick a gender as they do an ice cream cone or a flavor lacks scientific support. And by floating these unreasonable and foolish proposals, the American Medical Association has basically exchanged the Hippocratic Oath for social and partisan activism. As Charlie Dickens and I have discussed at length on so many times, Americans have always expected doctors to follow the adage, first, do no harm. The copy that I've just shared with you was submitted to me from the American Family Association. This is unbelievable stuff. These are the things we're reading day by day by day by day. It is unbelievably profound, my friends, what this nation, what this world is going through. And hence, we open with this piece of music tonight. Which I unbelievably cannot remember the title of the song. Oh, God. What's the title, Michael? I can't believe I did that. It's one that I've got saved. It's actually on one of our websites. Let me see if I can find it real quickly. Is it on Sierra Madre? I don't think so. Huh? Yeah. Probably on Federal Observer. Yeah, I'm blanking. Oh, yeah, that's perfect. What the hell are we dying for? Doesn't that begin to answer something? We're dying for all of this? Our children are dying for this? Our grandchildren are going to be dying for this crap? Enough of this story. I'm not going to spend an entire hour talking about this stuff. There are other issues that I want to cover. Oh, and by the way, Maggie Rose will be with us tomorrow night. Hope you're out there, Maggie. One of the pieces I came across a couple hours ago affected me for a combination of reasons. I've got a client who's a farmer. I've got a good number of clients who happen to be farmers. And the more and more stuff I read, we're hearing about the war on small farms. Some of these wars are being conducted by people like Bill Gates and others. But we've got the USDA committing a war on small farms. Whose pockets are they in? You know, most students in this country are introduced to the writings of Upton Sinclair. And while the people are not shown his incredible cover-up of the Holodomor or his other Soviet apologisms, they're presented with his most famous work, The Jungle. And that work tells the tale of Sinclair's investigation into the wretched working conditions of the meat packers of its age. Dealing with lost limbs, failed inspections, Sinclair wrote about the meat being contaminated and barbarously prepared. And that tale is meant to show the supposed failures of laissez-faire capitalism with its disregard for workers and health. Readers are supposed to walk away with a firm belief. Oh, my goodness. Just got a note from Michael at the network. You can tell the listeners that I have read The Jungle. My family is fourth-generation Texas farmers. It's rough. Readers of this work are supposed to walk away with a firm belief in the need for the regulation of these firms. Or is it farms? Hurrah! Here comes the mighty state to provide safety to the masses that would otherwise be made sick by crony corporations. All of which is far from the truth, my friends. Murray Rothbard once documented in the Progressive Era the truth of the United States Department of Agriculture, the USDA, regulation. Rothbard observed that nearly every inspection passed in any form of legislature or bureaucracy was fueled by protectionism from existing firms. And those regulations were not there to provide safety to consumers, but rather to keep competition out of the marketplace by fiat. And we ain't talking about the cars. Rothbard stated that the only meaningful definition of monopoly is an exclusive legal right granted by the state. And perhaps then the only meaningful definition of so-called monopoly powers is a firm's ability to push regulation that harms their competition through the state. And my friends, even today, the USDA and its regulations threaten to crush small farmers under its heel. A small hobby farmer, even one that simply isn't a factory farm, can hardly stand up to these regulations, and that is intentional. Meat processing in the United States must be done under the supervision of a USDA inspector if the goal is to sell the animal product to another person. A farmer cannot simply butcher his or her own animal, cut it into the usual meat products, and sell it at a farm stand. Oh, no, that would violate USDA regulations. Regardless of the ability of farmers to inspect and keep their own animals healthy or of their own skill in butchering livestock, they must have a USDA inspector. USDA inspector to sell the product on the market. Let me tell you something. Back in the late 70s and early 80s, I lived in a combination of Sedona and Flagstaff, Arizona. I sold Volkswagen and Audis in Flagstaff, Arizona. One of our clients was a pig farmer. He'd bought several cars, including his daughter's very first car. He bought a used Volkswagen Super Beetle. It was a pretty nice car. It was red. And he started talking to us. And his pigs would give birth to a new bunch of little baby pigs. And he sold us these pigs. And he sold them for a price. He raised those pigs. He fed them until they were a certain size and weight. At which time, it came time to butcher those pigs and cut them up into pork chops or little, you know, whatever. I don't know if we got bacon on them or not. I don't recall that. But we'd get pork chops and we'd get roasts and stuff of that nature. Fresh, amazing stuff. Would that all violate USDA regulations today? I mean, regardless of the ability of farmers to inspect and keep their own animals healthy or of their own skill in butchering livestock, they must have a USDA inspector to sell the product on the market. Not back in those days, we didn't have to deal with that. The inspector is not provided, though, free of charge by the USDA through taxpayer dollars. Oh, no. Rather, the individual meat processor must pay out of pocket for those services. And as far as meat processing goes, the USDA charges anywhere from $86 to $238 an hour for inspections. None of which guarantees the quality of the meat. Simply gives a rubber stamp to large processors that can afford to pay the processors. Oh, so you see, it all comes back to the old fact that if the government's involved, it's big bucks, man. I mean, bigger is not necessarily better, as one can apply basic logic to the inspection process. Those moving larger volumes of meat are able to afford to pay an inspector by the hour. And by throwing large volumes of the goods over and over in a constant stream at their workers and inspectors, mistakes can be made. This method of inspection incentivizes for large volumes rather than quality. Oh, it's rare to come across a small farm causing health issues, but it has become increasingly common to come across recalls from large processors like Purdue and Lakeside Refrigerated. Those large outlets can certainly afford to pay for an inspector, but that does not guarantee quality. The solution is, rather than increase the scale of operations, America must decentralize its meatpacking and processing, which means opposing bureaucracy that forces family operations to pay for a bureau rat who guarantees neither safety nor quality. In a free market, quality and safety can be ensured by a variety of means. An organization like the USDA might arise, but it would be held accountable by profits and losses. Individual processing firms may pay the free market USDA to verify the health of their product, and yet, if the free market USDA fails to stop an illness from arising through their own inspection failures, oh, they just might lose their credibility with both consumers and the producers that pay them. Profit and loss provide greater incentives for success than a bureaucracy that theoretically cannot go under. Right? Well, even better is the decentralization of the food processing industry altogether. Greater accountability can be held to more local institutions, such as farmers currently barred from processing their own food. Word of mouth, of course, spreads quickly among neighbors. Any exchange that a consumer is comfortable making, they should be allowed to, knowing full well the risks. Why should a government get between a farmer and their customer buying meat from them? I grew up in a good portion of my life in southeastern Wisconsin. Dairy, beef, pork, it was all there. Turkeys. My great-grandmother and I, for Thanksgiving and or Christmas each and every year, went to a turkey farm. Picked out the turkey that we wanted for our Thanksgiving dinner or whatever. And guess what? We stood there. The farmer got the turkey, whacked off its head. We took the turkey home and Grandma fixed it. Could that even possibly be allowed today? All of this has become the entire basis for Thomas Massie's Processing Revival in Intrastate Meat Exemption Act, something they call PRIMAC, which would circumvent the USDA's jurisdiction for exchanges at a community level. The act would exempt custom slaughterhouses from USDA inspector requirements if the exchange occurs within state borders and follows any state-specific laws, which would be an important step toward decentralizing the food system. If conservatives and libertarians care about competition for small farms, they should support defanging the federal bureaucracy used by large corporations to capture the markets. Oh yeah, the USDA should have its regulatory powers removed. The ability to provide safety in food should be returned to the market, because markets provide a far more welcoming place for producers and a far safer result for consumers. Commentary, David Brady, a Catholic libertarian and an economics and finance undergraduate student in Florida's Southern College. Interesting commentary. I hope my farmer friend in Missouri is tuned into this program tonight. Well, I guess having shared all of this, we have to begin to realize that we are all being watched. Every one of us is being watched. We're all suspects, waiting to be matched with a crime. Justice Antonin Scalia once stated, "Make no mistake about it, your DNA can be taken and entered into a national DAA database if you are ever arrested, rightly or wrongly, and for whatever reason." And he concluded by saying, "I doubt that the proud men who wrote the Charter of Our Liberties would have been so eager to open their mouths for royal inspection." Be warned, my friends. The DNA detectives are on the prowl. Whatever skeletons may be lurking in your family tree or in your closet, whatever crimes you may have committed, whatever associations you may have with those on the government's most wanted lists, the police state is determined to ferret them out, to ferret you out. In an age of over-criminalization, round-the-clock surveillance, and a police state eager to flex its muscles in a show of power, we are all guilty of some transgression or other. No longer can we consider ourselves innocent until proven guilty. Oh my God, they may come after me for buying those pigs years ago. But you see, now we're all suspects in a DNA lineup waiting to be matched up with a crime. Suspect state? Meet the genetic panopticon. DNA technology in the hands of government officials. Why is it that everything goes back to government officials? Spies, rats. DNA technology in the hands of government officials will complete our transition into a complete and total surveillance state in which prison walls are disguised within the seemingly benevolent trappings of technological and scientific progress, national security, and the need to guard against terrorists, pandemics, civil unrest, etc., etc. How many of us today would be looked upon as terrorists? Most of us listening, and we're together here tonight, don't care to participate in pandemics or plandemics. Civil unrest may be coming. By accessing our DNA, the government will soon know everything else about you that they don't already know. Is that better? Your family chart, your ancestry, what we look at, what our health history is, what our inclination to follow orders or chart our own courses are. My friends, it's getting harder and harder to hide, even if we think we've got nothing to hide. Armed with unprecedented access to DNA databases amassed by the FBI and Ancestry website, as well as hospital newborn screening programs, police are using forensic genealogy, which allows police to match up an unknown suspect's crime scene DNA with that of any family members in a genealogy database to solve cold cases that have remained unsolved for decades. As reported by The Intercept, forensic genetic genealogists are combing through the genetic information of hundreds of thousands of innocent people in search of a perpetrator. And so by submitting your DNA to a genealogical database such as Ancestry or 23andMe, you're giving the police access to the genetic makeup, the relationships and health profiles of every single relative, past, present, and future in your family, whether or not you or they ever agreed to be part of such a database. Ancestry? Oh boy, they advertise the living daylights out of that on television, don't they? Indeed, relying on a loophole in a commercial database called GED Match, genetic genealogists are able to sidestep privacy rules that allow people to opt out of sharing their genetic information with police. The end result? Police are now able to identify and target those very individuals who explicitly asked to keep their DNA results private. And in that manner, merely choosing to exercise your right to privacy makes you a suspect and puts you in the police state's crosshairs. It no longer even matters if you're among the tens of millions of people who have added their DNA to Ancestry databases. I have not. As Brian Resnick reports, public DNA databases have grown so massive that they can be used to find you even if you've never shared your own DNA. And that simple transaction, a spit sample or a cheek swab in exchange for getting to learn everything about one's ancestral makeup, where one came from, who is part of one's extended family. All of that is the price of entry into the suspect state for all of us. After all, my friends, a DNA print reveals everything about who we are, where we came from, who we will be. And it can also be used to predict the physical appearance of potential suspects. It's what the cops like to refer to as a modern fingerprint. And whereas fingerprint technology creates a watershed moment for police and their ability to crack a case, DNA technology is now being hailed by law enforcement agencies as the magic bullet in crime solving, especially when it helps them crack cold cases of serial murderers and rapists. I mean, after all, who wouldn't want to get psychopaths and serial rapists off the street and safely behind bars? Right? At least that's the argument being used by law enforcement to support their unrestricted access to these genealogy databases. Oh, and they've got the success stories to prove it. There's a 68-year-old Pennsylvania man arrested and charged with a brutal rape and murder of a young woman almost 50 years earlier. And relying on genealogical research suggesting that the killer had ancestors who hailed from a small town in Italy. Investigators narrowed their findings down to one man whose DNA obtained from a discarded coffee cup matched the killer's. In another cold case investigation, a 76-year-old man was arrested for 2-decades-old murders after his DNA was collected from a breathalyzer during an unrelated traffic stop. And yet it's not just psychopaths and serial rapists who are getting caught up in the investigative dragnet, my friends. It's in the police state's pursuit of criminals. Anyone who comes up as a possible DNA match, including distant family members, suddenly becomes a part of a circle of suspects that must be tracked, investigated, ruled out. And in this way, guilt by association has taken on new connotations in a technological age in which one is just a DNA sample away from being considered a person of interest in a police investigation. Makes you begin to kind of look back at your own ancestors, your own family, does it not? As Jessica Cousins warns in Psychology Today, the fundamental fight that data from potentially innocent people should not be used to connect them to unrelated crimes. It has been lost. And until recently, the government was required to at least observe some basic restrictions on when, where, and how it could access someone's DNA. That was turned on its head by various U.S. Supreme Court rulings that heralded the loss of privacy on a cellular level. For instance, the U.S. Supreme Court ruled in Maryland versus King that taking DNA samples from a suspect does not violate the Fourth Amendment. The court's subsequent decision to let stand the Maryland Court of Appeals ruling in Rayner versus Maryland, which essentially determined that individuals do not have a right to privacy when it comes to their DNA, all made Americans even more vulnerable to the government assessing, analyzing, storing their DNA without their knowledge or permission. That's without your knowledge or permission. And all of this has been downhill ever since. My friends, the government has been relentless in its efforts to get hold of our DNA, either through mandatory programs carried out in connection with law enforcement and corporate America, by warrantlessly accessing our familial DNA shared with genealogical services like Ancestry and 23andMe, or through the collection of our shed or touch DNA. Get ready, folks, because the government has embarked on a diabolical campaign to create a nation of suspects predicated on a massive national DNA database. And all of this has been helped along by Congress, which adopted legislation allowing police to collect and test DNA immediately following arrests. And Trump, who signed the Rapid DNA Act into law, the courts which have ruled that police can routinely take DNA samples from people who were arrested but not yet convicted of a crime, and local police agencies which are chomping at the bit to acquire this new so-called crime-fighting gadget. Oh, yeah. For example, Rapid DNA machines, portable, about the size of a desktop printer. Highly unregulated, far from foolproof, And yet so fast they can produce DNA profiles in less than 2 hours. And they allow police to go on fishing expeditions for any hint of possible misconduct using DNA samples. One journalist, Heather Murphy, explains that as police agencies build out their local DNA databases, they are collecting DNA not only from people who have been charged with major crimes, but also, increasingly, from people who are merely deemed suspicious, permanently linking their genetic identities to criminal databases. In all 50 states now, my friends, all 50 now maintain their own DNA government databases, although the protocols for collection tend to differ from state to state. Increasingly, many of the data from local databanks are being uploaded to CODIS, C-O-D-I-S. That's the FBI's massive DNA database, which has become a de facto way to identify and track the American people from birth to death. Oh, hey, man, even hospitals have gotten in on the game. They're taking and storing newborn babies' DNA. You know how that pisses me off? Next week, my granddaughter is going to be giving birth to my first great-granddaughter. And is this what they're going to have to go through? Because the parents don't even know this is happening. There's no knowledge or consent by these parents. It's part of the government's mandatory genetic screening of newborns. In many states, the DNA is stored indefinitely. And there's already a move underway to carry out whole genome sequencing on newborns, ostensibly to help diagnose rare diseases earlier and improve health later in life, which constitutes an ethical minefield all by itself. And what all of this means for those being born today is inclusion in a government database that contains intimate information about who they are, their ancestry, and what awaits them in the future, including their inclination to be followers, leaders, or troublemakers. Hey, let me give you an example. Police in Jersey accessed the DNA from a 9-year-old blood sample of a newborn baby in order to identify the child's father as a suspect in a decades-old sexual assault. The ramifications of this kind of DNA profiling, my friends, are far-reaching. At a minimum, these DNA databases do away with any semblance of privacy or anonymity. These genetic databases and genomic technology also make us that much more vulnerable to creeps and cyber stalkers and genetic profiling and those who would weaponize the technology against us. And yet, unfortunately, the debate over genetic privacy and when one's DNA becomes a public commodity outside the protection of the Fourth Amendment's prohibition on warrantless searches and seizures continues to lag far behind the government and corporate America encroachments on our rights. And moreover, while much of the public debate, the legislative efforts, and the legal challenges in recent years have focused on the protocols surrounding when police can legally collect the suspect's DNA with or without a search warrant, and whether upon arrest or conviction, the question of how to handle or shed or touch DNA has largely slipped through without much debate or opposition. In the words of Leslie A. Prey, we all shed DNA, leaving traces of our identity practically everywhere we go. In fact, the garbage you leave for curbside pickup is a potential gold mine of this sort of material. All of this shed or so-called abandoned DNA is free for the taking by local police investigators hoping to crack unsolvable cases. Shed DNA is also free for inclusion in a secret universal DNA databank. What all of this means, my friends, is that if you have the misfortune to leave your DNA traces anywhere a crime has been committed, You've already got a file somewhere in some state or some federal database, albeit it may be a file without a name. And as the dissenting opinion of the Maryland Court of Appeals shed DNA ruling in the Rainer, and it rightly warned, a person can no longer vote, participate in a jury, or obtain a driver's license without opening up his genetic material for state collection and codification. It's merely a matter of time before government agents will know everywhere we've been, how long we were at each place by following our shed DNA. And all scientists can already track salmon across hundreds of square miles of streams and rivers using DNA. And so today, helped along by robotics and automation, DNA processing and analysis and reporting takes far less time and can bring forth all manners of information right down to your eye color and relatives. And incredibly, one company specializes in creating mugshots for police based on DNA samples from unknown suspects, which are then compared to individuals with similar genetic profiles. Of course, none of these technologies are infallible. DNA evidence can be wrong either through human error, tampering, or even outright fabrication, and it happens more often than we are told. And my friends, what all of this amounts to is a scenario in which we have little to no defense against charges of wrongdoing, especially when convicted by technology, and even less protection against the government sweeping up our DNA in much the same way it sweeps up our phone calls and emails and text messages. Understand, it's only a matter of time before the police state's pursuit of criminals from the past expands into genetic profiling and a preemptive hunt for the criminals of the future. John W. Whitehead. I find Whitehead to be an amazing, amazing writer. I look at this and I go back to our opening of tonight's program. It is amazingly profound. The piece that I wrote so many years ago, so many years ago, that we opened this program with tonight. Sex, drugs, rock and roll. Sex, drugs, guns, and rock and roll, which, as I told you at the beginning, is the name of tonight's program. Go back, listen to it again. It covers a wide range. It jumps all over the place. But there was so much that I wrote 21 years ago that has affected us. It's come to pass. Names and examples that we shared with that opening. The commentaries about some of the issues that are affecting us in this country today. COVID, transsexual surgery that converts a boy to a girl and a girl to a boy. And I read a piece last week, they've now found ways to take the bodies of deceased women, transfer part of their bodies into guys who want to become gals so that they can become pregnant. This is insane. This has become an absolutely insane world that we live in. The answer is yes. I hope that this program, to some degree, affected you. I hope, on top of that, it angered you. Not that I'm sure we can do much of anything with it. You sitting down to have a steak tonight or a pork chop. That was the one odd piece that was kind of outside the parameters of the program, except that, once again, government involvement. There's not a damn thing we can do the government's not involved with anymore. Join Maggie Rose tomorrow. You have a great weekend. Lord willing, I'll see you next week. Without apology, I am Jeffrey Bennett. I want to speak, but I don't make a sound. Locked in my mind, you're all I think about. I want to save us, but I don't know how. If we don't love like we used to, if we don't care like we used to, what the hell are we dying for? If it doesn't cut like it used to, if you're not
Einstein once said, "Future medicine will be the medicine of frequencies." What did he know? Imagine you hear ocean waves caressing a beach, or a favorite song from the past, or the trickle of the babbling brook. All of these are sound frequencies that positively affect us. Terahertz is a soothing, healing frequency that has been proven to resonate at the same frequency as healthy cells. It penetrates the body and stimulates new healthy cell growth. Want to diminish muscle aches, joint pains, and experience a greater sense of well-being? Tired of spending money on short-term remedies that never seem to work? Soothing, healing, relaxing terahertz frequency is now available, and as handy as flipping a switch. Terahertz technology is changing the course of what we were taught about how to maintain our health and well-being. To read more about this amazing breakthrough and to order your terahertz frequency wand, go to naturalearthmedicine.com. That's naturalearthmedicine.com.
This is RBN, the Republic Broadcasting Network.